everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Ann Whitman with me. She's a certified professional midwife with over 30 years experience home birth in Massachusetts. You don't look like you have 30 years experience, but you do. So Ann, thank you for being with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, I know before we started hitting record, we were talking about COVID and just the connections you had started going into like 30 years ago when you started. Kind of tell me your midwifery story and what it was like 30 years ago compared to now.
Yeah. Well, gosh, that was a long time ago, but it seems like yesterday still. I feel so fortunate that I ended up in the circle of midwives in Massachusetts. I felt like it was accidental, but I'm sure it was a path that I was supposed to take. So I was 21 when I had my first baby, and one of my very good friends had a baby a year before me, and she had her baby at home. And I had never heard of having home births as a child or growing up, but when I saw that she was having a home birth, I thought that was crazy. And yeah. Yeah, I was a little judgy about it.
And then it's not the cultural norm. It's not the cultural norm, and you're pushing against the grain for sure.
Yeah, you know, and I came from a pretty mainstream upbringing with my mom had her babies in the hospital, and you know, everything was like it was back then in the 60s. Yeah. And so all this information just started coming to me. You know, articles in the newspaper that were just about interventions in the hospital and why they should be questioned. And then my brother-in-law was working for a company that published books about natural birth and home birth. And when I first became pregnant, he just like dropped off a stack of books at my house. And so I read them. And then I was pretty hooked pretty quickly for natural birth and home birth. And so I ended up having all my babies at home except the last one, and that's a whole
another story in itself.
So I have 6 children. By the time I had my second baby, I was teaching childbirth classes and doing labor support. We didn't have the word doula back then, but that's what we did. And then I started midwifery school soon after that. I was just so lucky that the midwives that served me for my births saw that I had some potential and asked me, you know, how do you feel about walking this path? And at first I thought it was crazy. It was the 80s. A lot of moms didn't work back then. A lot of women didn't go to college back then. And it was just sort of, my thought was, I'll get married, have babies, stay home with my children. And it was really, really difficult for me to think about working and having children at the same time. So I just told God, if it works out, I'll keep going. If it doesn't work, I'll quit. And it just always works. So, and the women that taught me, I mean, bless them, because, I don't know how I would be here without having those mentors. And that's what I feel like we're missing with COVID, is just not just working together, because we do, obviously, like I hire other CPMs to assist me at births, and they're absolutely wonderful, but we don't have time physically together, or even not too much virtual time, where we can get together and just talk things out or have peer review or do things socially and just kind of have the group be more
cohesive and relate to each other more.
From each other. You know, I've been 31 years I've been doing this, but I learned so much from the midwives that I work with, and they're often usually younger than me. So, but yeah, they're on the edge of the information. They're right at the peak of the research. You know, it's so wonderful to be able to just learn from each other. You know, there's things that I know just from longevity, but, I really do value what I get from other midwives that I work with.
Well, I think sometimes we forget the collaboration. We think in a linear model that, well, the seasoned midwives are teaching the younger generation, but it's actually a cohesive balance of back and forth. And if you aren't mentoring and you're not collaborating, you're not keeping up with the trends because you just don't have time to do it. They're doing it. They're passionate. They're young. They're feisty. And that energy will kind of trickle over to you. Like, okay, I see this great generation coming to serve midwifery next when I retire. If I retire, that's always the comment with midwives.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping for another 10 years. It's amazing. My body. You just have to hope the body holds up. That's all.
Exactly. I know. It's not so much the mind. The mind can't, sometimes the body can't keep up with the mind and catching those babies and get that good proper body mechanics still going in.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely something that I focus on to make sure that I stay healthy as much as I can. But I've had down times that where I couldn't work for a while. And I know it's a balancing act, and I can't really control that. I just have to kind of accept what comes.
Yeah, exactly. Life, I think COVID has taught everybody, especially, that you adapt and you adjust to what's in front of you. Could you tell me some more directions? I know you said 30 years ago, like the midwifery environment, I would love to hear from Massachusetts perspective, what it was like when you started your midwifery career to what it is like now.
Yeah. So when I started, there was a relatively new group called Massachusetts Midwives Alliance back then. And it was founded by about six midwives-ish. Mm-hmm. And they created a structure very early on in the early 80s for certifying midwives on a state level. And there was no CPM until, I didn't get my CPM until 2000, which was right after it became available. So way back then, the model was very, very similar to the route to getting a CPM. So I don't know how they created it. I came in on like year three. Okay. And what I heard was that it kind of came over from California. There were some midwives that moved here from California. And they created the structure, which was very, very strict. When I came into it, I just thought, oh my gosh, there's no way I can do this. It was a lot of academics. It was a lot of numbers we had to get. 75 home births. Wow. As an assistant and 75 home births as a supervised midwife. And we had to do 150 prenatals and 150 postpartum visits and be certified in CPR and NNR and all those things. And then we had an entire, like, the practice guidelines and protocols and risk factor guidelines that we had to know. Mm-hmm. And we had to agree to practice within the guidelines. And then we had very formal peer reviews. If we wanted to go outside of a protocol, we needed to come to the group and
talk discuss about it.
And there was accountability for clients. So if there was any issue, they had any complaints against midwife, we had a complaint review process. And it was great, you know, because if you got through that, you were a good midwife. So that led to the CPM. We contributed a lot of that knowledge to the creation of the CPM credential. But I was just so impressed by the professionalism and the high standards of midwives that I worked with back then. Mm-hmm. And I like the structure. I think that we're lacking in Massachusetts because we don't have licensing yet, even though we've been trying for 30 years. So I have my New Hampshire license. I have my Maine license. And I've been working in Massachusetts for my entire career.
Why do you feel like it's been such a challenge? It sounds like, 30 years of trying to get legislator, what have been the biggest barriers?
Well, we have full legislative support. And full. It's both sides. Mm-hmm. We've never been able to get the Speaker of the House to take it to the floor for a vote. We keep thinking it's going to happen every session. We file every session. The sessions are 2 years. And we work hard to try to get it done, and then it doesn't get done. And so it's either because, Massachusetts is a medical mecca and there's someone that doesn't want us.
On the inside, yeah.
Mm-hmm. On that. Although if we look at all the other states, it's actually helpful in so many ways, and I'm sure they can see that too. So the other possibility is that there's not enough, like they don't think there's enough consumer demand to make us important enough to get us.
They've got a priority of projects and they're looking at the big society and this 2% of the population versus now we've got a bill, we've got to evaluate 70% of the population, right?
Exactly. So that may be part of it. Whatever it is though, it's extremely frustrating because I'm, for all these years, I've been serving people that mostly have to pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not fair. We don't get a diverse clientele.
Yeah.
When we do that, I'm constantly having to, you know, let people know that call every day that insurance probably won't cover.
Yeah.
And then they don't have access.
Yeah, it's a huge barrier to midwifery care. I had 3 home births and 1 insurance plan. Coincidentally, while I was in midwifery school, it was a Pennsylvania program, but the one I had, the 2 Michigan ones, they didn't pay for it. So it's always interesting, like insurance is out of state. Sometimes they're good and bad, but it is, it's frustrating. Like we want to serve so many diverse populations and the ones that would benefit the most from midwifery is the underserved. And it's a financial barrier to be able to take care of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's my biggest complaint and the thing that I'm always trying to work on, but it is very frustrating.
Yeah, and you've got to run a business and we have value and that's what's hard too. I think sometimes that's the Achilles of so many midwifery practices is our heart sometimes takes a higher priority than our business. And then we wonder why we can't pay the bills and ourselves and we can't go on vacation and retire because our heart took over the financial numbers. What is the average reimbursement in Massachusetts for a home birth? I always like to ask just to get the trends on a national standard.
You mean, what do I charge?
Mm-hmm. What do you charge?
I'm not allowed to say.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're familiar with antitrust laws and...
Well, you can say your fee schedule. I mean, when patients call and ask, it's more of like your in-network contracts or your insurance reimbursement. You can't really tell. But yeah, if a client or if someone calls your practice, but if you're not comfortable saying, that's okay. But yeah, the antitrust laws are more for what you're getting from an insurance company so that there's not that inside competition.
Right. Well, you know, my lawyers have always told us that we should never discuss our fees with each other as midwives.
Okay.
Because they don't want us to be able to create any kind of monopoly.
Oh, okay.
So, especially where, you know, when we all belong to the same organization, so that actually fits in there. So I try not to.
Okay, that's totally fine.
Let people know when they call, but.
right. Yeah, that's totally fine. And then, so as far as like, do you tend to use a midwife, a birth assistant? Like what structure do you have for your midwifery practice as far as a team?
I always bring an assistant with me, and sometimes it's another CPM, and sometimes it's an assistant that I trained.
Okay. And is it based on like a client, if they're a little more high risk, you want a little more skills, or how do you make that decision?
Personality fit, values, availability.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say those are the biggest
factors. The bigger ones that you focus on. Okay. Okay. So what words of wisdom as far as running your midwifery practice, if someone is thinking about going to midwifery school, starting a home birth practice in the area, what tips would you give them from all your years of running a home birth practice to be successful from day one?
Wow.
And it could be anything. It could be a business tip. It could be a work-life balance, whatever direction. I know I left it pretty open on purpose.
Yeah. It's really difficult to start being a midwife for sure. You know, I mean, just getting your CPM, let's assume you get your CPM and you're ready to go. It's just really hard. I can't tell you how difficult it was for me in the beginning. Because obviously like clients want to hire someone who has experience.
Yeah. It's a vicious cycle when you're a new graduate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can't get enough clients to support yourself, but then you can't have another job because then you're on call.
On call 24/7, yep.
So it's a hugely difficult leap to make. And, I sympathize with everyone who has to go through it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, starting a business in general, and there's that curve, but it's okay. Are you the breadwinner? And sometimes you can find little side hustles that are flexible, but midwifery is a unique business, like you said, where you've got to be available, whether you have one client or 10, you've got to be available 24/7.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know the answer to that question because it was a struggle for me for mm-hmm. sure. If I had to do it right now today, I don't know how I'd do it. On the plus side, you know, we definitely have a lack of midwives in Massachusetts. We could use a whole bunch more.
Yeah.
So we're all booked all the time. Yeah. And we're all not getting enough time off. So.
Yeah. Well, and I encourage a lot of new graduates to find these busy practices with experience and maybe do like a fellowship, preceptor, new grad, because knowing, I mean, I think the biggest thing that happens is clear expectations. Like, are you joining the team? You want to work together long-term and take over this practice? Or is your intention just, because I think sometimes tension happens in a community where their intention, the new grad's intention is just to do a year and then split off and do their own practice. But then the other midwife had the intention they're going to take over for theirs. And so I think it's always important to have clear expectation, but yeah, leveraging the experts around you and their clientele, because they're all busy, they're all having waiting lists, there's plenty of clients. I think it's creating that nice umbrella where the clients are comfortable with you because you've got that good mentor close relationship as you're getting experience.
Yeah, I don't know, I don't see midwifery continuing the way that I do it. You know, I'm the sole provider for my clients, and I hire someone to come with me. So they know I'm going to be there. But I've taken on or interviewed or started to work with, you know, a dozen people in the last 3 or 4 years. And they all quit. Students.
Yeah.
They're not able to do it. They're not able to be on call all the time. You know, they'll give me a list of times they're not available. And I'm just like, this isn't really how this works. Like, if you're... You just kind of, and I'm not saying that I'm on call all the time. I take 2 months off a year.
Right.
So I'm off in April, I'm off in October. And because I know that I need time off, but the rest of the year I'm on call all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how to be a midwife without doing that. I'm sure, you know, what is evolving is bigger practices that have 3, 4, 5 midwives and they take call turns.
Rotation,
But that's not what my clients want. They want to know who's going to be there. And,
right.
you know, that's why they hire me. And I think that, you know, continuity of care and an individual relationship with a midwife is hugely important for outcome. And I'm sad if that goes away.
Yeah, there's goods and bads to it. I mean, I think we have so much burnout with midwives and the demands of life and young families and school and all the responsibilities. And then to be a midwife, like if you're young and single and you're just going to, I joke and don't joke, it's the nun midwife. Like you just live and breathe midwifery. You're going to just, this is everything to you. But it is, I think it's hard in today's society because women want to have a good work-life balance and it is getting difficult. Midwifery is 24/7. It is, you don't know if you're going to have a baby and it's the unpredictability. It's not like you can schedule it. Like I always joked, if I could make an algorithm for birth, my business structure would have been 10 times easier, but we can't. So you have this wild card service that you could be there for an hour. You could be there for 20 hours and you have so much unpredictability in your structure of life. And how do we support both styles of midwifery so that we can give great individualized care, but we're also not burning out the profession in the process.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, my family has never been happy with my job. I love my job. When someone calls me, I love going, I love being there. But it takes a huge toll on everyone else. Yeah. So, you know, it's a really difficult life choice to make, like for someone to know what they're choosing.
Right. Well, and I think it's clear expectations. Like it's not just the beautiful bursts and catching and the wonderful things people see on YouTube. It's the other parts of the occupation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Anne, I guess one last question I have for you. Where do you see the future of midwifery, particularly in Massachusetts? Do you feel like the demand is getting higher and higher and more midwives like practice? I know you said there's waiting lists, but just the culture and demand since COVID, have you seen a huge shift in the community?
Yeah, huge amount of people wanting home births that is new. I heard a quote the other day from someone on the inside that said it, they saw a 47% increase in home birth in Massachusetts since the beginning of COVID. That seems accurate. So it's been good, but at the same time, we need more people. Right? Yeah, I would hope that we would get licensing and that we would have
the reimbursement.
Consumers, you know, asking for that so that that can happen, so that we can provide more midwives and give more people home births that want them. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it is amazing what the consumers, because like you said, if all of a sudden there's a huge increase and the voters are directly calling the representatives versus just the midwives are advocating. I know a lot of states, that's how they got huge momentum, was they got huge petitions with the consumers in the state requesting bills to be passed.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of consumer support for sure, but I just wish that the legislators would hear it.
Well, especially post-COVID, I mean, birth centers and home birth practices are, they already had extensive waiting lists, and now it's like double extensive waiting lists. So with your practice, what is your average a month? I know you said you take those 2 months off. How many clients? Do you have like a limit or a structure in a 5-week window you take? Like, what does it look like?
Yeah, I just, my math is pretty simple. I take 3 people per month.
Okay.
Because I don't want them to overlap, and I want to be able to tell people that I'll be there. Mm-hmm. And that's worked for me for many, many years. And sometimes I increase it to 4 if I have a repeat client that calls me late in the game.
Yeah, understandable, understandable.
Yeah, but that's a good number for me. I can get all the work done. I can get all the visits done. And I still have a little bit of time for my family, so...
Yeah, it keeps the overhead low. I know there's some midwives that take 10, 12, 15 in home birth, but they also have a very strong, where there's 8, 10, 12 midwives in that community where it's interesting across the country, all the different structures, but yeah, the small and simple sometimes is the best. So
yeah, we started back in the 80s, we were doing usually 8, right around 8 per month. And it was busy. It was crazy. And we would have some overlap and I would miss some and we'd have to get coverage. And I don't know, I'm comfortable with 3 or 4 because I get enough sleep. And
right. Well, and you're at a different stage in your life of where how busy you want to be and if there's grandkids and other life things. So no, 3 to 5 is a very common number I hear from home birth midwives. So, well, thank you so much for being on with me today, Anne. I really appreciate your time. Is there one last thing you want to add for words of wisdom to anyone watching this?
Yes, there is.
Okay, perfect.
I just think that after all these years, the thing I learned the most about being a midwife is to just be the person to help create the space and not intervene. And through prenatal care, give people that confidence to know that they can birth their baby and just really be that gatekeeper and create that space and, you know, try not to bring fear and concern to a birth, but try to bring love and peace and confidence. And I just, that's my biggest goal, is to have my clients be able to birth peacefully as much as possible.
Oh, I think those are perfect words of wisdom to end on. Thank you so much, Anne.
You're welcome.